Now, I want to draw your attention to a book. I'm always interested in books on recent Irish history, and this one is worth a read, whether you agree with everything in it or not. It'll be up to you to decide. It's called A Broad Church, The Provisional IRA in the Republic of Ireland, 1969 to 1980. And just as a little seller for the book, on the back page, it says, during its three-decade military campaign against British rule in Northern Ireland, the Provisional IRA used the Republic of Ireland as a base for training, supply, financing and support. This groundbreaking book is the first to detail how integral the Republic was to the veracity of the Provisional IRA's campaign at every level. The amount of sympathy and support in Irish society for militant republicanism demonstrates that the longevity of the Troubles was due in large part to such widespread tolerance and aid. The writer is Gerard O'Feeline. Gerard, good morning.
Good morning, hello.
Very much involved with university down in Munster, is that right?
That's right, I did my PhD at the University of Limerick.
A lot of people who will be from, shall we say, a unionist stroke loyalist persuasion will totally agree with that last sentence there, that the amount of sympathy and support in Irish society for militant republicanism demonstrates that the longevity of the Troubles was due in large part to such widespread tolerance and aid. People who maybe in some cases have never been to the Republic of Ireland believe it's a hotbed of support for the Provos, or it was. Is that the message in the book?
The message is that I think a large part of the population of the South had at best ambivalent attitudes towards militant republicanism. But that I think that was as well, you know, it has to be said for balance, fed in part by the situation that they seen in the North, you know, this what they would have seen as oppression. So, as well, coupled with that, you had, of course, the kind of long ideal of reuniting the country. So, you know, it would be dormant. That kind of support would be dormant at times and would come to life then when there would have been, you know, let's say something like internment introduced or the reaction to the civil rights campaign.
So whenever something was very much in the headlines, as you say, internment or civil rights or eventually the hunger strikes, the like of that would have generated support for the Provisionals, regardless of what they were doing. Like those same people in the South who were prepared to support them, were they not ticking off the atrocities carried out by the IRA?
I think people, if you talk about the large proportion of the population that was a bit malleable, you know, that went in and out of support for the IRA, they would have absolutely been, you know, against the IRA in terms of attacks where civilians were targeted, and they would have made their feelings known as well. But a large part of this population would have been able to turn around and have no qualms about the fact that, you know, when British soldiers were targeted, you obviously had the hardcore Republican support who would have, you know, obviously not cheered on the killing of civilians, but would have seen it as an unfortunate almost byproduct, to use a, you know, very crude term, of, you know, the Provisional IRA's campaign.
And what about absolutely within political circles? Charlie Haughey came in for severe criticism down the years for his tolerance of a campaign that was happening in Northern Ireland. He may have had his critics within the Republican movement, but there were certainly people who felt he was soft on terrorism. Did that manifest itself in a number of political parties, or were people maybe more like what Garrett Fitzgerald was seen to be like?
I think within the political parties, at a level of members of parliament, of TDs and the Dáil, I think most of them would have been absolutely opposed to the Provisional IRA's campaign. You know, even Charlie Haughey, previously during the IRA's border campaign, 1956 to 62, you know, Haughey was very harsh on Republicans. And in the 1960s, during this lull period, you know, he had banned the sale of the Easter Lily in the South, which, you know, caused riots and there was a lot of arrests. So Haughey, you know, and then in the 1970s, apart from the arms crisis, which could even be seen as a power play within a, you know, political party struggle, as in getting people, you know, who would have been nationally minded on board for him if he was to make a power play for leadership of Fianna Fáil. Because if you look at all Haughey's actions before and after the arms crisis, he would have been someone who was very, very harsh on Republicans in the South.
Yeah, it's just worth emphasizing your interpretation of the arms crisis, because some people won't understand what you're saying there, his involvement in that.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, so Hahi and two other ministers, or at least one other minister, were responsible for trying to get weapons, and did get some weapons onto the island, we'll say, in order to arm nationalists in the north. Now, Hahi and this other person was Neil Blaney. They were put on trial, and they were basically, they lost out, they were kicked out of the cabinet, and another minister resigned in protest at this. One of those other ministers, the one who resigned in protest, Boland, he, throughout the rest of his political career, was very publicly Republican and supportive of the IRA, whereas Hahi was not, we'll say. He would have been in governments that introduced juryless courts. He would have been in a government where there was very coercive, you know, physical and psychological abuse meted out to prisoners in order to extract confessions. So he was certainly not seen by Republicans as being soft on Republicanism, or as part of, you know, sympathetic to them.
Were unionists and loyalists justified in their analysis that if an IRA member managed to get across the border, that a blind eye would be turned in the likes of Dundalk or Castle Blaney or along the border on the way across to Donegal, that the guards might set up the checkpoint on the wrong road to ensure that they didn't catch those who were escaping? Or is that an injustice to the Garda Síochána?
I think by and large it's an injustice. I think the Gardaí and the Irish Defence Forces were very set on suppressing the IRA. Their hands were tied sometimes by legislation. But I think, by and large, they were opposed to the IRA. They seen members of, particularly the Gardaí, you know, members of Garda Síochána were shot by the IRA in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s. So they would have been opposed to them. But there was always a reluctance, you know, and you would see this with the reluctance to extradite captured IRA members to the north, to Northern Ireland, to face trial. There was a reluctance to do that given the lack of a proper justice system in the north at the time, where there was internment or after that Diplock courts. I think the preference would have been for those in the south, either politically or within the judiciary or within the Garda Síochána, that if they could arrest them and try them in the south and put them in jail in the south to put them out of action, rather than send them up and face the political distastefulness of having to bring in extradition in the face of, you know, the situation in the north. There would have been a big backlash against that in the south.
And some of those backlashes did come, especially when Garda Gerry McCabe was killed by the IRA while on duty in the Republic. And there's been a lot of talk because of his son, Brian Stack's son, who constantly challenged Martin McGuinness when he wanted to become the Irish president. Brian Stack was a prison officer who was shot and later died by the IRA. Did that cause revulsion in the Republic?
Yeah, I think it did. You know, you can see, there were several in the 1970s in the course of armed robberies. There was other Gardaí shot, and people would come out to show their solidarity and let's say their disgust at the IRA in large numbers at the funeral. So that's how you could see, you know, people's reaction to that. But I mean, the strange thing is when you speak to interviewees, as I did, you know, they would have anecdotes about people who would demonstrate their disgust at these kind of actions. But again, you know, would be fine with the IRA then when it carried out what they would have considered like a military or targeting a military target in the north. So there was, I mean, this ambivalence kind of, it was in all layers of Irish life, apart from, I would say, the political and judiciary from, let's say, 1972 onwards.
One of the largest losses of life for the British military here was the attack in Warren Point in 1979 on the parachute regiment, when a considerable number, I think it was something like 18 or 19 soldiers, were killed at Narrow Water. How did that go down generally in the Republic? Was there revulsion at that loss of life, or would you have spoken to people who would have celebrated that sort of attack, considering no civilians had been killed?
In Narrowwater, I don't think celebration, but certainly if it was a successful military operation against the British, that would have been seen as, okay, you know, a lot of people would just have not said anything about it. They certainly wouldn't have expressed distaste. But, I mean, as you know, the same day across on the other side of the country, there was the attack on Louis Mountbatten, and there was him and his, you know, and his wife and civilians were killed. So that would have certainly been, you know, I think, I mean, that was obviously even the bigger page news. That would have been something that was not taken well by people in the South.
So because children died when Mountbatten died on the same day in Sligo, they were openly critical of that attack, but they were more muted on the really what was the slaughter of those soldiers at Narrowwater.
Yeah, yes. And I think, you know, I mean, any such attack where there were civilians, particularly children killed, I think the people who would have got that most, you know, having their ear to the ground, were people who would have been selling on Phoblacht in the south. They would have been out on the streets. And people would have no hesitation in going up to them and telling them, you know, how horrified they were at this. And they were, you know, some people I spoke to would have been people who would have sold on Phoblacht, and they would tell you that, you know, people were very, very horrified at this.
Well, certainly an interesting read for anyone who likes to keep abreast of recent history in Ireland. It's called A Broad Church, the Provisional IRA in the Republic of Ireland from 1969 through to 1980. It's available via Merrion Press by Gerard O'Phelan. Gerard, thanks for speaking to us this morning. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
So there's another book to add to your literary mix if you're so inclined. And of course, make up your own minds on everything you read. But the more you read, I think the more you understand, as long as you're not constantly influenced by just one writer or one section of the community. Right, 0289 0333 105.